Hello and welcome to the brand new Open Goal podcast, Keeping the Ball on the Ground, brought to you by William Hill. We are the show that wants to provide the world with a Scottish perspective on the main talking points in football around the globe. As much as we all love the game, it's fair to say it's gone a bit mental recently with the mega bucks TV deals, billionaire club takeovers and FIFA running out of their own brown envelope inventory in recent times. And over the next 40 minutes or so and beyond, we'll be looking to have a bit of a laugh at the madness that surrounds our game with our weekly guests. I'm Mark Guidi, and joining us on the Open Goal podcast today are two legends of Scottish football, but unfortunately they weren't able to make it, so I've had to do with Andy McLaren and Simon Ferry. Andy, of course, former Dundee United, Reading, Kilmarnock, Dundee, Ayr United, Morton and Scotland striker. And Simon, who's only had a few clubs in comparison, Celtic, Swindon, Portsmouth, Dundee, Peterhead and Scotland under 21. Gents, thanks for joining us this morning to the first ever Open Goal podcast. Simon, how's it feel to be on the other end of the mic?
Pleasure, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here with your good self and Andy. Looking forward to it. I know the two of you as well. I know Andy's got a good partner. I'm not sure about you, Mark. not looking forward to it, mate. Should be a good laugh.
Andy?
Yeah, looking forward to it. As I say, a couple of good topics here to discuss now. Hopefully a good couple of good stories as well.
Right, well, we're going to kick off if we just cast our minds back to the Mark Clattenburg interviews recently, one of the top referees in England. He's now plying his trade elsewhere. He goes back to the one of the most important games in the 2016 season in the EPL down south when he was in charge of the Chelsea-Spurs game at Stamford Bridge. And he said Spurs going for the title that night, they needed to win, but they imploded. But he deliberately didn't send off some Spurs players because he didn't want to be blamed for Spurs losing the title. Simon, do you get where he's coming from? There's a method in his madness with that statement.
I think he's had sunstroke out in Dubai, coming out with that statement. I can't see what he's getting out of coming out and telling everyone this. I think Mark Clattenburg's favourite topic is himself. Yeah. I think he loves it. Eh?
Yeah.
He's obviously desperate to be a player. And that hair transplant's done something to his brain, I think. But making it all about himself, you know, that's got nothing to do with Leicester winning the title. Kind of diminishes Leicester for me, him coming out and saying all this. I remember watching the game, it was a fiery game, but no, I think it's stupidity for him coming out and saying all this.
Is he bringing the game into disrepute by basically admitting that he should have produced red cards, but never?
Yeah, I think, well, for me it's about him selling his book as well. I think he's got a book running about this time, so I think that's the amount of publicity he's had after, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So he's come out with that statement, knowing that it's going to open up a debate on it. And as Simon just says, Mark Clattenburg's best subject is Mark Clattenburg. You know, you used to see him when he refereed games, it was all about him. Mm-hmm. You know, he used to make some weird decisions. Mm-hmm. Then, and
he thought he was at a rave with that whistle.
Yeah, and he used to get.
you need to hold on to it. He's not been a wee bit harsh. Well, there's a guy who's refereed Champions League final, World Cup final, and you're saying that, you know, it's all about him.
You get guys like the guy, was it Kalina, who used to work on the Ghost Train, but I mean, you would never hear him coming out and saying stuff like that, would you? I mean, he was a top ref, but that's why he was a top ref. You know, you seen him in the games and that was it. You never heard him again. Well, it just seems to me that Mark Clattenburg wants to be a wee Z-list
celebrity. It always went on. A good ref was somebody you never noticed. Mm-hmm. You know, that was always a sign of a good referee, wasn't it? Somebody that at the end of the game you'd say, oh, he never made any decisions that were anything, you know. Whereas Mark Clattenburg, every game he played in, there was always something, you know, there was always a talking point. And I think he liked that for his image. He made a few quid off it, didn't he? Because he got the big money deal going to Dubai to become a referee. Well, probably on the back of that.
We'll bring it up here then. Let's bring it north of the border. Andy, you've been retired from the game now due to public demand for about six or seven years. Probably the referees actually want to do it.
Well,
you must have a few referee stories for us.
Well, one of the first ones is the Les Mottram one up at Fir Hill. It was a corner. Ball came in and we Paddy Connolly put it in the back of the net. Ball hit the stanchion. Ball came out. We Mark Clark picked it up, flung it away, and the ref says play on.
No way.
Honestly, it was a most bizarre, YouTube, it's the most bizarre decision you'll ever see. Wee Jim was...
Were you on the bench that night beside Wee Jim?
I think so, aye. Wee Jim and Luggy were going, okay, honestly. And actually, it stopped Paddy Connolly scored two that day, so it stopped him getting a hat-trick as well. I think they ended up with 1-3-4-0 that day, so it wasn't it wasn't that important, but it was the most bizarre decision I've ever seen.
How was wee Jim Mareftery?
Oh, it was just, honestly, it was incredible. I've never seen any. I was thinking about it the other night, actually, and I was just sitting laughing, just the way he used to. I've never seen anybody go as mental, like proper mental as he used to go. It was hilarious.
Give us one insight.
Well, there was one time he came in at half time, and I can't remember who was, but he used to come in and you'd sit down, and you wouldn't look at him, you know, because if he caught you, that was you were getting it, you know. Mm-hmm. So you would just hope that he would start with somebody else, and then if he did back to you. Me, what I would usually do is try and get somebody else to laugh. So you'd be making faces, trying to get.
Who could you make laugh? Who was one easy to get going?
Wee Paddy or somebody, or Big Dunk or somebody, you could make faces at that, and you just basically took the pressure away from you, you know. So he came in one day and remember the big plastic, they used to keep the soaks in that, and it was like a laundry basket. Mm-hmm. So he was getting somebody pelters, and he's booted this thing, but it stuck to his feet. So he's still shouting at the guy, and he's trying to boot this thing off his feet, and fucking everybody's heads are doing and their shoulders are gone. And Stuart Hogg, who was like a sprint coach or something, he was trying to pull it off his feet. It was absolutely priceless. And he's still giving the guy absolute pelters. I can't remember, as I say, I can't remember who it was, but it was hilarious. And as I say, but you couldn't laugh. Everybody was laughing, but if we Jim would have caught you laughing, it would have been your turn next as well.
But Simon, referees, I know you're still playing, so you need to be careful, but even down south, up the road, how'd you find them?
I think it's mixed, innit? You get mixed. We were playing this season, I'll not name the game or the ref, but standing just before I went out and the ref walked by us, thought he was going to tell us to check my studs or be careful with it. Love your interviews, mate. Oh, thanks very much, ref. Thanks, ref. Cheers, mate.
Goal interviews, I take it.
Oh, like, open goal. And then ball goes out to play, standing next to the ref. He's like, what about big body was saying? I'm trying to play this game. Ref's not a tweet, there's a bit of big body. But no, as you say, I think they're mixed. I feel sorry for refs. It's a hard job, innit?
But see, when you say that, you're talking there about the referee having a bit of patter with you. On the part, that's what they're accused of not doing. They're accused of being robotic. So is it not refreshing actually when you get somebody and he's able just to
I think a few years ago they were, because they've now been pulled up, and there was one instance where one of the refs told one of the players to fuck off and he got caught. Mm-hmm. And there was a big outcry about it, and I didn't mind that, you know. We were young and that used to, you know, if you were moaning at them while you're young, would tell you uh-huh. shut up and things like that, and have a wee joke. I remember moaning, just kept moaning at Willie one day, and he says, Andy, I came out of the house to get away from that, you know. and you see that, you have a wee laugh about it, and then you think, you know what I mean? So it kind of breaks the ice a bit, doesn't it, you know, and kind of takes the tension off, because, listen, football's a high pressure game, you know, so they're under as much pressure as the players.
I think Willie Collum gets a bit of stick as well, and when we were in the under 19 Scotland, went to a tournament in Le Mans, and Willie actually came over with. And he wasn't anything like I expected him to be. He was actually quite a good laugh. We nicknamed him the Crazy Frog, not a wee frog. He looked like him. We used to call him that, and he took it in good patter. But he was saying, you know, he loves to have a bit of banter with you as well, Willie, when you play against him. I would say, come on, Willie, you're doing me here. He's like, I've never heard of you, son. So I definitely like it. I think it's
It takes a sting off it, you know, because one minute you're angry and then the next minute you're laughing, you know. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I think a wee bit more of that. But as I say, they're under that much pressure, aren't they? With TV cameras and people lip reading and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I think that.
But you mentioned one thing there about them being under pressure. You had an incident December 2006, yeah. Clyde v Dundee. At Broadwood, 3 red cards in the one game.
It was actually 4, Mark, but I appealed one and got it back.
Dougie McDonald, so talk us through it.
I was with Dundee, and it was a nothing game. We were playing at Clyde and we got a penalty, and I think we were 2-1, we scored to make it 2-1, so you know, you get to try and get the ball. It's one of my pet hates, you know, when you score a penalty and the keeper grabs the ball and he's not letting you get it, and it was one of the ones. And it was wee boy Davy Hutton. And I ended up, I got a yellow card, but I knew that was taking me a suspension, so it was like 2-3 games or something. And I go to the ball, and Dougie McDonald gave me the card, and I think I volleyed the ball. I just, listen, there was a lot going on in my life at that time, and sometimes you go in the park and your head's not right, and that was one of the days, and I kicked the bottom, and then there was a bit of a scuffle, I read, and then in the way after, there's a wee guy up to me, and squaring up to me. And
what, a supporter?
No, one of the players, one of the Clyde players, and I went to punch him. But it was one of the, it was like the canny over the ref one. Can I really fail? So I got another one for that, and I must have said something the way off, and then I think I volleyed the ref's door off as well. So I got four for that.
What one was rescinded?
I think it was the kicking the ref's door, because you hadn't seen that one. but I got an 8-game ban or something for it. But listen, it was a storm in a teacup, you know, it made it a big thing, but I look back at it now, actually. I pissed myself laughing about it. It was actually quite funny when I look back now.
And you, Simon, any particular referee ones?
Nah, not really. Just as I say, the interview story, but the referees have all...
But you don't tackle all that, do you?
I'm going to do it. I just want to do it.
He's hardly played a game. He can tell you a few physio stories, but he couldn't tell you referees.
That's what I was going to say. The referee probably touches the ball more than I do. What about you, Mark? Any you remember now?
Referees, the only thing I can remember way, way back, played in the 10 at sixes for St Mirren, when it used to be the Kelvin Hall, I think,
yeah.
Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Would that be 1990-91? And on the telly, Campbell Money gets sin-binned, so I've got put on St Mirren v Hearts. I've lasted 2 minutes. I've upended Scott Crabb. I think I've conceded 3 goals, and Brian McGinley was the ref of Brian McGinley's.
Was that the end of your football career then?
That was just the start. Brian McGinley's produced the yellow card to sinbin me, and as I'm walking off, the TV cameras zoomed in, you can see the and I'm turning around to Brian McGinley and I'm calling on my, and I remember sitting in a house and watched it later that night with my parents. Mum was like, oh, look at that, it's terrible. So there's been a couple, but the referees, I think they do well. I just wish that they, and I've had this discussion with John Fleming, the referee supervisor, I wish that they could just, the public, the supporters, are allowed to see that side of them that you're talking about, you know, going back to Willie Young's days, going back to that referee. I just think sometimes they don't do themselves any favour, because see, the bottom line is, they're all normal guys like us, they love their football, they love going for a pint with their pals, having a blender, different things like that. So I wish they could just, there was a wee bit more of a chance for me to show the human side of them, rather than them being portrayed as some kind of, you know, robotic guys without feelings.
You say that robotic, that's it. And sometimes the way they speak to them, they don't help, they speak to players as well, they don't, I used to hate the school teacher when they would stand and come to me and do that with their finger. I used to, you know, so these things, see, rather than just jog by somebody and have a wee word, see things like that. I like the referees that kept the game going and just had a wee quiet word with you.
Okay, we'll move on. Here we are in the very first Open Goal podcast with William Hill, Mark Guidi. I'm joined with Andy McLaren and Simon Ferry. Now, TV deal, we'll talk down south, it's getting put out to tender again. The offers are going to come flooding in down the road, and it's just going to be absolutely ridiculous. Once again, it's going to go to new levels financially. And one of the things that the TV companies are talking about is putting into the contracts Saturday night, 7:45, live game on the telly. First impressions, Saturday evening, is it going to work in the UK?
Nuts. I think it's nuts. Saturday evening, what would you have been?
No.
Imagine you 10 years ago at that time on a Saturday night.
Well, we were talking about it, because about 15, 20 years ago, they done the same thing. We said, I don't know what company it was, but they done 6 o'clock games on a Sunday night. And I remember being absolutely raging, because your full weekend was ruined, wasn't it? You couldn't go out on a Friday, you couldn't go out on a Saturday, and Sunday you weren't getting out to about 9:30, so your full weekend. The boys were... I remember when it first happened, and I was in the dressing room shouting and bawling, we can't play football at 6 o'clock on Sunday night. What are you meant to do for a night out, you know? So quarter to eight on a Saturday. It's not just the players, it's punters, especially down in England. You know, but maybe imagine Newcastle being in London at, you know, for a quarter to eight game. It's transport links back
you,
up the road.
You look
it's
at La Liga, they're kicking off 9:30, 9:30, 10:00.
But it's a different culture there.
It's a different,
different culture. You know, you go to Spain and things come alive at 10 o'clock. You know, it's people are just getting out at that time, where the culture out here is totally different.
You're getting huckled. You're getting huckled out somewhere at 10 o'clock, isn't you?
What's that?
You'd be getting huckled out somewhere at 10 o'clock.
My first place of the night.
How would the police react then down south? Do you think they'll go for that 7:45 on a Saturday night? You see games in Newcastle, London, Manchester, Liverpool.
Imagine a big derby at 7:45 at night. Pete have been drinking all day. Mayhem, innit? Absolute mayhem. I just can't see.
But money speak. But it's not. Listen, that's not about. It's not about England, that's about the global thing, isn't it? That's maybe, because it's maybe a good time in China for a game, or it's maybe, you know what I mean, Dubai or something, you know, so it's kind of aimed at, it's not about England anywhere or Britain, you know, it's a global thing, isn't it? So it probably, that time's probably a good time somewhere else, you know.
But then I suppose if you're the authorities down the road and you're looking at the offers and it's worth an extra couple of hundred million quid to have 6 or 7 games on a Saturday night over the course of a season.
Oh, you bite your hand off, don't you?
That's really funny as well. See, like, a Saturday night, it's like a family night, innit? So if you're sitting in the house, you can't.
Watching that on deck.
Right, we're watching
Saturday night takeaway.
Newcastle tonight.
Strictly come dancing.
Factor or something, you know? I don't like to watch any of that, but that's...
Simon's more of a Strictly man, I think.
Me and my missus get up and... what is it, the gay Gordon tonight? But imagine watching Stoke v West Brom on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, turn the telly off. Sit on the couch. Sit on the telly and watch a couch. But nah, not for me. Saturday night.
Money talks.
I think the half five's a good. I quite like the half five. We play on a Saturday. Get on the party bus for Peterhead. Stick the game on the iPad and sit and watch it. So, but 7:45's too late.
Are they just now? Is there just total disregard for football supporters now?
Aye, looking at that, yeah. But it's not about the fans now, because you look at teams like Bournemouth, have got like 10,000-12,000. So see whatever they make through the gate, it doesn't mean nothing, does it? You know, they maybe make, what do they make in season books? £1 million, couple of million quid. So teams like Bournemouth and that be as well getting the season books away for nothing, because they're pulling in, what, 110, 120 million for TV. So I'm going to be honest, I don't think the club's really... Does it matter if they've got 25,000 or 40,000 through the gate now? It's got to that stage where the fan, they used to say they pay the wages, but I think we're that far away from that now.
No, I agree. Fans have got no say in it now, have they? It's all about, especially the Premier League, they're so big now, isn't it? I don't know how people can afford to pay it. The prices are a fortune. I even see, we playing League Two games, 25 quid for a ticket to watch League Two, you're like... Oh, who would pay to watch me kick the ball at the pitch every 5 minutes? You know what I mean?
Well, clearly no many. Andy, you can take us back, because you're involved 30 years ago and your career's start almost 30 years ago. It started, well, when you think it's nearly, when was the World Cup under 16, 1989?
89,
so you think just after that, starting with Dundee, stop trying to kid on, you're only 38. What did you enjoy when you fact that you knew your working week and everything was geared towards Saturday at 3 o'clock? And if you weren't in the first team, you were at the opposite ground, the opposition playing as well in the reserve league.
And that's what, just Saturday was football day, wasn't it? You know, you get players now and you see them, they don't care if they play. You trained all week for a Saturday, you know, and Saturday at 3 o'clock, as you say, you used to, if you weren't in the first team, the reserves would be, it used to be brilliant, because if... Say, for example, Dundee United were playing Celtic at Tannadice, we'd be playing at Parkhead, you know, and maybe as a 16, 17-year-old kid, so you'd be going, and I remember one of my first games, we played Celtic, and it was big Paul Elliott had just signed.
Yeah.
So you were getting to play against guys like that, you know, you'd go to, maybe go to play Rangers, and it'd be Mikhailichenko's and top internationals, and we'd have maybe 2 or 3 guys, and that's where you learned, that's for me where you learned the game, you know, you went and played against good, experienced, seasoned pros, and you just learned. They wouldn't talk you through the game, but you just watch them and watch what they were doing and pick up wee things like that, you know. But the 3 o'clock games were brilliant, you know. It was.
I remember just touched by myself at St Mirren, and the odd reserve game would get, and you'd end up playing at Ibrox against them. Imagine. You'd end up playing at Celtic Park, and I remember Tony Cascarino was bombed out the first team at Celtic, so he played a resi game at Parkhead. I was in goals, and obviously that was it for him. You know, it was brilliant.
he managed to score
as every striker. I think I got him his move to Chelsea. Actually, I think the Chelsea scout was there that day and got him his big move. But when you talk about that, and Simon's a bit younger than us, but those were great days, and it was a proper schooling for boys trying to make their way as well, wasn't
100%,
it?
100%, because to go for the youth team into reserves was a big jump, and then, you know, but I remember making my debut, and it was against St Mirren in the reserves, and Billy Abercrombie, and I'm a wee tricky winger, so I've put the ball by him, and the next minute I'm lying in the track. Abba's just fucking whacked me, but I'm 16, I'm like, what are you doing? But it taught you, you know, because very quickly you learned, if I try that again, he's just going to do the exact same thing, you know. So you learned the hard way, because these guys, they didn't mess about with you either, you know. It wasn't as if you...
Brilliant. That brings us on nicely to the next bit that we're going to discuss, was the fracas with Austin McPhee and Darren McKinnon at Tynecastle. Bobby Madden, the referee, involved in it as well. And then, of course, it became a free-for-all Sunday there, the Manchester Derby, with had the tunnel incident with Jose Mourinho, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Mikel Arteta. What do you make of all of that, starting at Tynecastle, first of all?
I says to Frank McAvenny, that looked to me like Frank on a Saturday night with a bird. Austin McPhee, and that was nothing. Didn't even throw a punch. Everyone's making it like it was Royal Rumble, man. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I didn't see what the problem was.
Because you see, when you first heard about it, you're thinking, I'm dying to see this, because you're thinking it's going to be a proper fight. But I think Austin McPhee was being a wee bit naughty. I think he was trying to get the boy McKinnon sent off. I think he's already
in a yellow.
He'd already been in a yellow. So he was trying to be a wee bit cute, you know. And then, this hits handbags.
I think the best bit was the policeman with Paul Gallagher, wasn't it? The Hearts goalie coach, I think that was
the best bit. See, the fights, there's been a million of them, and there's never a punch thrown, you know. It's just handbags, isn't it? It's all, everybody's just in there pushing and shoving, and I've been involved in a few of them, and after it, boys are all pissing themselves off about it, you know what I mean?
What's your favourite one, Andy? You can be involved or not.
I've had a few. One of the funniest ones was up at Dundee United, and it was during training, Paddy Connolly, who's the most placid wee guy in the world. He's one of the guys in football, and he's got a bad word to say about Paddy, and he attacked David Hanna one day. The boys just couldn't stop laughing, you know, because Paddy was just, and he jumped up and tried to punch him and flung the worst punch you've ever seen. And see, for weeks after it, he just got pelters, you know. He's like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that now, you know. It was like maybe a bad tackle or something. I've had a few. But Simon, you'd have probably been like me. You'd have been the wee guy in the back shouting the odds, right? With the big guys in between.
Well, I've seen, we played Southampton in the Carling Cup, scudded 3-1. But
for Portsmouth or Swindon?
Swindon.
For Swindon.
Ran my balls off. They had Lallana, Lambert, Schneiderlin. They were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. We had a big striker, Leon Clark, who's now banging them in at Sheffield United. So Leon had only been there 2 weeks. He wasn't as fit as DeCanio wanted him. So the wee fitness coach comes on after the game to Leon. Leon, brilliant, well done tonight, but tomorrow you need to run. Big Leon. No, bruv. No running tomorrow, bruv. No way.
Was he Welsh, Big Leon?
So, the Canio obviously sees that they're hearing a bit of set two on the pitch, so a gaffer comes over. Come on, Leon, in the tunnel. Come on, tomorrow we run. And I remember Leon flung the gaffer's hands off him. Next thing, eruption, man.
I remember that.
I mean, flinging punches, man. Two of them.
This is out on the pitch?
No, in the tunnel. The tunnel at Swindon, you can still see the tunnel goes right down. So, for the pitch, you can. You're all like that. Yes, let's go. We're all running in. They're flinging each other about, but the gaffer flung him about like an empty trackie. And then the last thing I see is Leon sprinting down the corridor, back out onto the pitch. The gaffer's coming in the dressing room going, absolutely mental, man. Your friend, Leon. telling us how much
See
money
he's like, you cannot. You're dying to laugh,
but if I laugh, he will fling me about. And then he's like that to us the next day. He always had a joke about it as well, but he's like, you tell your friend Leon, if I see him, I kill him. But never seen Leon Clark again after that. Transferred away, that was it, done. But that was just so surreal, man. But the gaffer could go, man. I remember on a Tuesday, I used to play head tennis with young boys. So I'd always leave later than everyone else, maybe 5 o'clock, and I'd always just peek in the gym, and there he was on the punch bag, man, lead in the punch bag. Say we were playing like Crawley on a Saturday. He'd be like, oh, Simon, on Saturday, this is what we do to Crawley and Steve Evans. Wah, wah, wah. Just a funny, funny guy, man, who could fight, could definitely fight, man. Nigel Winterburn was right to shit it.
What did you make of the Manchester and the aftermath now? I mean, somebody saying Mourinho just asked for a bit of milk in his tea and it's all started. Erupted.
Mourinho's brilliant at that as well, but because they've just been beat, hasn't he? So he starts something that kind of deflects away from it as well. And takes a bit of, you know what I mean? So he's clever, you know, he's probably. I mean, you've seen it. Remember he done it a couple of years ago with Real Madrid, the Barcelona one? He went there and just poked a guy in the eye.
So he did that.
Just walked away. So, listen, it wouldn't surprise me if it was something like that, you know, because he's. They get absolutely battered, let's be honest, on Sunday. So that's probably a wee plan he has to try and divert the attention away from him.
And Arteta covering himself up in the car, is he a mountain of a molehill, or do you think
that's a game plan, isn't it? Pep's told him to get the ice pack on the head. But somebody said that Marcus Rojo kicked him there. I thought he'd been tiring because all he'd done was leather that boffered up the pitch for 90 minutes. Never seen somebody kick the ball so hard for 90 minutes, man. But no, I love all that. Guardiola loves it as well. He kids on, he's this nice guy. He loves it all. I seen all this Man City players celebrating after the game, and that's planned.
I think it says a lot for your teammates and all. See, like, if something like that happens and everybody's in, I love that. Uh-huh. You know, like,
I'm usually in the toilet.
No, but if there's a tackle in the middle of the park, it shows a lot of your team spirit, I think, uh-huh. You know, because if Simon done it, then everybody would just walk away. But it's something that it shows that the players care as well, doesn't it? You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
I saw the bit at the end of the game, the Manchester derby on Sunday, when the backroom staff are trying to get Guardiola. Yeah. What I couldn't believe was, what about the amount of backroom staff? No, it's been 14, 15 people there.
It's unbelievable.
What do they do? Tell me what they do. Please tell me. What can they actually do?
It's unbelievable.
For the genius that he is, everyone says Guardiola's a genius. What does he need 14 people for? If he's that much of a genius.
Is he the best though, just now, Guardiola?
Definitely. I think he's the best.
Is the balance of power clearly now shifted to the Etihad from Old Trafford?
Aye. And I think they're good. They play the way Man U used to play as well, which is, you know, they're dead easy in the eye, aren't they? They're lovely to watch. You watch Man U and so many games are... They're hard work to watch, aren't they? They'll grind out 1-0. And I know it's all about winning as well, but see, a team like Man U and that, the way you're playing, didn't they? Entertaining. And mm-hmm. I don't think they're doing that now. But Man City are brilliant to watch. Your boy De Bruyne is unbelievable.
Oh, frightening, isn't he? You just think how many of the Man United players we get in the Man City team?
No.
I wouldn't be picking many.
But they look as if they've got 14 players sometimes when they're playing, don't they?
That's the right way to play, though, I think, yeah. You know?
They look as if...
Didn't see enough in this country, yeah. People playing like that, but it shows you it works. See if you get the ball down and pass it.
I bet it's funny if you've got players like that. Yeah, I suppose, outside, uh-huh. You know.
But the other thing is, you know, you look at the EPL league just now, City, lovely gap, very similar to the gap Celtic's got up here, and yet our league gets slaughtered, it's a one-horse race. When you look at Man City, they look as if they are going to run away, that could be finished by Christmas. So you've got to ask... For all the millions and the super managers and the money that floats about around there should be a greater competition, should there not?
Definitely. I watched some of the games on a Super Sunday. Oh, my God. And then I watched the SPL game on the same day, and it's much more exciting.
You look at Hibs Celtic on Sunday. Great game. Brilliant game.
Uh-huh. End to end, all the time where it's done there, it's three shots on goal sometimes. You know what
they just promote the life out of it, didn't they? Yeah.
They market it well.
They tell you, oh, this is a great game. And this, and even the build-up. I mean, the Manchester and Liverpool derbies there, it was...
2 weeks ago, it's getting build-up. Uh-huh.
Interviews and then you're watching. Everton were horrible. Uh-huh. You know, they just sat in and... I mean, Everton spent £150 million last year and they're still going to Liverpool and playing like that, sitting in. I know Big Sam's just in and people say it's a great point, but why go to... You want to go and support your team and watch them having a wee go, didn't you? You know what I mean?
So you look at a wee too harsh on our product up here in the Scottish Premiership?
Definitely, I think so. I mean, obviously, Celtic had the bad result in the Champions League against Anderlecht, but same again, I watched the English teams in that Europa Cup, and they get battered. They get absolutely battered, but nothing really gets said.
Everton never won a game, and I don't understand that either, because... They work all year to get to Europe, and then they play young boys. Mm-hmm. You know, like Everton, you think you get into the Europa League, you think, because I've been thinking before, Everton have got a wee chance of winning this, you know, and that gets you into the Champions League as well. But, I mean, many teams have done that. They qualify for the Europa League and then they just can't wait to get out of it, doesn't it? It doesn't make sense.
You mentioned Everton there. I mean, the next one we'll discuss is the Merseyside derby on Sunday. The main incident, obviously, the penalty one, Lovren on Calvert-Lewin. First of all, just get straight to it. Andy, was it a penalty
Stephen
kick?
Waller.
Simon?
No, I think it's a penalty, definitely. I don't know what he's done.
So what do you make of Klopp then in the aftermath with the interview with Patrick Davidson from Sky and all the journalists and, you know, basically saying that it was never a penalty? He must be the only guy that thought it was near a penalty.
But he's deflecting faced.
Well,
but when he took Salah off, I nearly jumped off my couch. He was absolutely terrorising that fullback. Why take him off? You're playing West Brom a week later. He's battering the fullback. He looks like your chance of scoring a goal. And you take him off, it just completely baffled me. And I thought the reporter was spot on what he was saying. People in the studio saying that it's a penalty. And as you say, Klopp's glasses must have been steamed up.
The boy Coutinho scored a hat-trick midweek, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then he dropped him, you know.
And Firmino as well.
Firmino dropped as well.
He's a striker. If you're scoring goals, you just want to play all the time, don't you? If you score a hat-trick on the Tuesday and then you're not playing on the Saturday or the Sunday, whatever it may be. But listen, the game should have been finished by then as well. The boy Manny's right through and has just
to square it.
2-0, game's done. Listen, I was happy for Rooney because I think he's the hard time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People give him a hard time. But anyway, what a player he's been for 15, 20 years, you know what I mean? And now it's so for him to get his goal in the Merseyside derby and shut a few people up. He got a hat trick the other week as well because people, I think he gets a hard time, you know. People don't realise what an unbelievable player he's been. I mean, you've seen his goal the other week, the man for the halfway
line. Some strike,
I was there that night, and that was live. That was a proper.
That's a special, special player that can do something like that, you know, because the technique on that is incredible, you know. Simon, you'd do that then.
Oh, never attend that. I'd have turned back and passed it back.
Simon's been able to do that in a fun force pitch.
No, I couldn't kick the ball hard, honestly. Can I kick it hard?
You go back to the interview with Klopp and Patrick Davidson. Was it a cringy one? Were you raging with Klopp? Were you feeling for the reporter?
I love the reporter because usually a reporter would shit himself a bit and then go, it was a penalty, it wasn't a penalty, you know. But the boy was brilliant. He went, no, it was a penalty. And listen, I think everybody's seen it was a penalty. As again Simon says, Klopp's trying to deflect. I think he's under a wee bit of pee, isn't he? Didn't there? Everybody's under a bit of pee after two or three games, isn't they? So it was a game they should have won. And by the way, I would be having a go to the defender. See if I'm Jurgen Klopp. I'm saying, what are you doing? He was ushering him out to the side of the park. So it was the defender's fault.
What do you make of the interview, though? I mean, you've been in the game, Andy's, we've said, for 20 years, any interviews with anybody at the club that you've watched or you think, ooh, here we go.
Wee Jim had a few, didn't he? The one with John Barnes.
With the BBC.
I remember sitting watching it.
Banjoed him, didn't he?
But that was another one. I think listen, you have interviews and you say, right, mention that and don't mention that. And I think wee Jim had said, don't mention something. Mm-hmm. And John
don't
Barnes,
ask me. Yeah.
Don't ask me that. And John Barnes kept going, but it was funny because I remember sitting watching it, and then the next you heard the punch, and you didn't actually see it right, didn't you? And and you heard wee Jim swearing and that, and it was.
Did he mention it after Andy when he came in there?
I don't think I was there at the time, but I remember watching it, and at the time I was pissing myself, but then it was kind of sad because I think that was him. That was the last thing he'd done in football, you know, and for everything that wee Jim had done, I think he should have been remembered for something more than that, you know, because the other side, he was unbelievable.
What's got to be, I mean, you said, Jim says, don't ask about that, but what's got to be remembered if you're a manager or you're a player, you're dealing with clubs, is they've got to realise that, I know, you know, Sam, you're on that side of the microphone now, I've been there doing live interviews for BT Sport. There's got to be an understanding that you've got a job to do, and you've got to ask the question. How the manager or the player or the chairman answers the question is up to them, but you've got to do your job
You're asking what the fans want to hear, aren't you? Yeah. What's the point in going there and asking the same stupid questions over and over? You're asking questions that people want to hear. Managers must understand that, surely. Yeah. Surely.
But it used to be Fergie and that. They would pray and they would tell them what you ask them, wouldn't they?
Well, of course, listen, it works both ways. Go make sure you ask me about this, because as you say, if you're talking about there's something that they want to get out there, or there's something they want to deflect, then it is a perfect opportunity. So it's a two-way street.
The best one I've seen is when we played Preston. I've told you the story that when De Canio took Wes off after 12 minutes, he told Wes to get beat it, basically. So we're getting the bus home, and we've all got the iPad out watching Sky Sports News, and who pops up? The gaffer's interview. He's like that. We're not talking about no Czech. We're not talking about Petr Cech. We're talking about League One Wes. Was League One Wes. He was nothing before me. We're up the back of the bus, absolutely killing ourselves, and the gaffer's staring up the back of the bus. See what we're looking at, but that made me laugh, man. League One Wes. But that's the best interview I've seen for a manager. It absolutely cracked me up, man. Brilliant.
Well, we're getting towards the latter stages of the podcast for the referees looking at his watch. We've got a couple of minutes to go. Andy, if you sum it up, if we just look up the road here again, just to finish off, can you see Celtic just going away with the title? Or do you think we've got a wee bit of a competition emerging?
Yeah, I think Celtic have got a break now for Champions League, and I think that's when they kind of put the fit down and go and put the league to bed. I think they've not got a game now to February. The Europa League game to February, and I think this is when the bigger squad and everything like that. This is when injuries and all that kick in as well for other teams. So I think Celtic will just go and build up in another sellable league.
And you know Derek McInnes very well, former teammate of yours at Dundee United. Were you surprised that Derek said no to Rangers?
Aye, I was surprised. Knowing Derek as a day and knowing what a big Rangers fan he was. But there's obviously, I'm no privy to what's happened in any of the meetings, so obviously Derek didn't feel it wasn't right for him at this time. And you've got to respect that as well, because it must have been an unbelievably tough decision for him to make. Knowing that going to Rangers, it was probably his dream as a boy, you know what I mean?
And Simon, your old gaffer, Neil Lennon, coming back from two goals down at Easter Road, he must have been delighted. What would you imagine Neil would have been in the dressing room at full time there on Sunday?
I think he'd have been delighted with his players, but I think he'd have had that wee bit that we could have done it. That's twice now they've went close. Knowing him, I think he expects his teams to win every game, just the way he is. Wouldn't matter if he was managing the team at the bottom league or fifth in the league, he expects his team to win every time. And as you say, I thought Hibs were great. Really did. Thought they were great. Their pace on the wings, good in midfield, good defence. I really like watching Hibs this year. I think he's done a great job there. I think he can get a few players in January. They could challenge for a second.
Brilliant. Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure. The last 40 minutes has been great. I think he's been so good. You might just get an invite back later on in the season, but I wouldn't keep checking your phones just
that
in case.
You're hanging on me.
But it's been a pleasure to have you on the first Open Goal podcast, Keeping the Ball on the Ground, brought to you by William Hill. I hope you enjoyed listening. I'm Mark Guidi, and we'll see you soon. Cheers.